Welcome to Simple Living Works. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to present part of Tony and Shane Uncut, the complete dialogue in 8 episodes between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne on simpler living and global justice, which became the DVD Simply Enough, reissued recently by World Vision Canada as Choose Justice. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, and comprehensive lifestyle. Our mission is to equip people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. To learn more about us, listen to episodes 1 and 2. In this episode, I present one of the 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut, a conversation between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne. To learn how this powerful dialogue came to be, listen to episode number 3 called The Saga of Simply Enough. The link is in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Our hope is that you will be so motivated by this series that you will want to share the message with others in your congregation or group. Order a copy of the DVD Choose Justice with this extensive discussion guide from the store at thesimpleway.org for only $10. It is also available from World Vision Canada and from Tony Campolo's store. All those addresses are given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. See pictures of Alternative's crew in Philadelphia producing the original and links to the bonus segments. Links are in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. To get better acquainted with Tony and Shane and their ministries, follow the links in the show notes.
We want to get to the justice issues. You're very interested in social justice, not just on being charitable to the poor, but helping the poor, changing society. How can we go about doing that?
Well, there's a lot of... Locally in our neighborhood, there's a bunch of creative ideas that we've had because I used to call us a 501c3 anti-profit organization, you know? and then we saw that we really need some jobs, you know. Yeah. But we want the jobs to be jobs that don't just produce stuff, but they do things that we believe in. Yeah. So one of my housemates had this idea: let's take T-shirts that are getting thrown away, T-shirts that are in thrift stores or donated, and let's silkscreen on them. So he started a silkscreening company where we now are able to provide some income in our neighborhood, and we silkscreen unused shirts. So we get them for like $1, silkscreen on them with ecologically friendly ink, you know, and then sell them for $10, you know. And now we're able to have a job there. But we're also, one of the things I'm really excited about is we have a lot of us that talk about trying to live into sort of a post-oil economy, where we're thinking about how we live and walking a little more gently on the creation. And two of our friends did is there's these two communities where they travel a lot because they're in vans, so they travel on their buses. So they decided that they could run their buses off of vegetable oil. So they converted their diesel engines to where it's got this dual engine now, and they gather up grease from around Philly. You go to restaurants, they're just like, you're throwing your grease out? And the crazy thing is restaurants are paying to get rid of their grease, so they're usually pretty happy to get rid of it. So they filter it, and they turn it into fuel for their buses. So now, my buddy just told me they've saved over $30,000 in fuel because he's with a band, Me Without You, and their band, MTV, got word of it, and they're like, this is nuts. We want to do a tour of the bus. So they do a tour of the bus, and they're able to say, yeah, and the reason that we do this, it's a little peculiar, but we look at the creation a little differently. Mm-hmm. A part of why we're doing that is because we want to learn to run things off of the waste of this society and to try to do that with integrity. And now, this is the neat thing, is we have a recovery community in Philly called New Jerusalem. All folks that are recovering from drug and alcohol addictions. There's about 50 people in this community. And they really need jobs, you know. So they had this idea after seeing our buses running off veggie oil. They're like, well, we could start a greaser co-op here. So we'll get the grease from around the city. We'll make homemade biodiesel, and we'll have filtered veggie oil for folks that run their cars off vegetable oil, and we'll start selling it. And so they did it because they got really skilled mechanics. They got all kinds of like wisdom and resources there. They just haven't had the jobs. So now they're able to have a Greasel co-op where we're making, you know, our homemade biodiesel and we're selling it out of the community there that's going to provide jobs for formerly homeless and recovering addicts, you know, and friends of ours.
Well, you know, you're an Eastern grad and I'm spent my life at this school. One of the reasons why I love this school is because they let us create a graduate program that trains people to go both to the third world and now to the inner city to do exactly what you're talking about, to start small businesses and cottage industries that will enable people to escape from their poverty with their dignity intact, a job creation. The president of our school estimates that the graduates from this little school, Eastern University, created over 1 million jobs in the third world, small businesses. And same thing you're dealing with. The first business we ever started was making sandals out of worn out discarded automobile tires. And we'd give the kids in Guachapita, this slum in Santo Domingo, 50 cents every time they brought us a worn out discarded automobile tire. Good ecological responsibility. So it wasn't long before we had every worn out automobile tire in Santo Domingo, and then we started getting a lot of new automobile tires. God works in strange ways. But at any rate, we started this business and making sandals that were not only sold within the Dominican Republic, but on the world market. And we began to develop other businesses, other cottage industries. But the president says over 1 million jobs have been created among the poor. And that's one way of getting us out of the mess that we're in with poverty. But there's another thing. I'm wearing my white band. You're not wearing yours. Shame on you. Aren't you embarrassed?
You've got two, you've stolen one.
I had two and I gave one away yesterday. But, you know, Bono started this thing, Dada, you know, and trying to get change on the structural level, to get governments and economies to change so that poverty can be eliminated. He really believes that poverty can be eliminated, as does Jeffrey Sachs up at the UN, that it can be done. We have the resources. We have the means, we just don't have the will. That's the big word. But Bono, the big rock singer from U2, was a speaker at the National Prayer Breakfast a couple of years ago. And there was the president and the vice president and half of the cabinet and the military with all their brass. It's congressmen and senators and people from the Supreme Court and ambassadors. And he got up and then about 1,500 evangelical preachers. And he went on great lengths complimenting evangelical churches for what they're doing for the poor. He said, you go down to the Gulf Coast after Katrina, everywhere you look, you see the church at work. You see them feeding the hungry, fixing up houses. The church is brilliant in doing these works of charity. And then he paused. This was a dramatic moment. And he looked at the President of the United States and he said, but I didn't come here today to talk about charity. I came here to talk about justice. You could just feel the electricity. And he started talking about the fact that we as a government could be doing so much more. For instance, this should be noted. If you look at the federal budget, this was last year, I don't know what it'll be this year, but it's less than 0.4% of the federal budget is appropriated to help the poor of the world in a direct manner. Less than 0.4%. I didn't say 1%. I didn't say 0.4%. Less than 0.4%. That is incredible. And he's saying, wouldn't it be wonderful if we doubled that? Now, the Bible calls upon you to do a lot of things. Maybe you ought to tithe, Mr. President. Tithe the wealth of America. And less than 0.4%. Do we, when we vote, when we listen to candidates, do we act selfishly? I remember when President Clinton was participating in those town meetings when he was running for office, and some young kid stood up. He said, "I'm 23 years old. This is the first time I get to vote. If I vote for you, Mr. Clinton, what will you do for me?" And when he said that, I cringed because I wanted John F. Kennedy to be there to say, do not ask what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. this selfishness, this egocentricity that's emerged. We want politicians who are going to meet our needs, our well-being. Are you going to keep us secure? Are you going to keep us safe? I know the general who led a major part of the British troops into Iraq. I know the general. And he said to me with sarcasm, just before the invasion started, "When will you Americans learn that your security is more dependent on the friends that you make than on the armies you deploy?" Mm-hmm. We think we're going to create security through armies. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this. If your enemy hungers, says the Apostle Paul, feed him. Mm-hmm. If he's naked, clothe him. If he's sick, care for him. In so doing, you will bring down coals of fire on your enemy's head, which is to say, your enemy won't be your enemy anymore. Now, is the Bible right? People who listen to this series is going to say, "We believe the Bible, we believe the Bible." Do you really believe the Bible? Do you really believe that the way to handle those who threaten us is not to embargo them, as we've done to Cuba for the last how many years, but to, in fact, respond to them and their needs? Yeah. 500,000 children died in Iraq before the second invasion because of the embargo. Yeah. And then we expected our troops to be welcomed like heroes with roses thrown at their feet. The leadership of our country said that's what we should be expecting. You can't create death for 500,000 kids and be welcomed if we would just respond as the scripture calls us to respond. But we must not only talk about changing the national budget. Third world debts. Mm-hmm. Bono has been a major instrument for calling for the abolition of third world debts. These poor countries have borrowed money from the World Bank and the International Fund.
I've been saying that when Jesus says in the scripture, if the church is silent and the rock stars will cry out,
Yeah. Very good. I'm going to use that line. But, you know, it's very interesting. George Bush did a wonderful thing. Because what we were doing with all of these loans, we say, hey, we're going to lend you money to buy stuff, buy food for your people, but the food must be produced in the United States. Mm-hmm. We're driving farmers in third world countries out of business. You know, it will give you money to buy food, but it has to be our food that you buy. And George Bush said, look, let's at least say 25% of the food that is purchased can be purchased from indigenous farmers so as to help these people. Let's change the structure of the economic system so that there's help for the poor and the oppressed. I know this will always get the farmers in the Midwest upset, but I raise questions about all the subsidies that we give for foreign products. I mean, I have to ask questions because we give billions of dollars to subsidize American wheat and American grain, which means you can go to Zimbabwe or South Africa and buy U.S. wheat, U.S. rice, U.S. cotton at a lower price than those same products produced indigenously. We are driving farmers, we are driving them out of business by the thousands by subsidizing our farmers and making our products non-competitive. Now, everybody talks about capitalism, capitalism, capitalism. Is it capitalism to do away with fair competition? And in fact, we have created an unlevel playing field. And there are those who are saying, we've got to do something to help the farmers on the one hand in this country. We can't afford to let them go out of business. We've got to find ways to help them. But on the other hand, we cannot allow them to drive farmers in third world countries out of existence. We've got to change the system, the trade agreements. We've got to cancel third world debts. You know, countries borrow billions of dollars during the Cold War, and we knew those dictators were spending that money, even as they borrowed it, on military machines, on projects that didn't make much sense. And we never said a mumbling word because we were buying their votes in the UN. Now those dictators are gone and the people are left with the debts. Mm. So if you live in Ecuador, every time you pay a tax dollar, 60 cents out of that tax dollar does not buy education for your children, doesn't buy health services, doesn't repair the roads to build the infrastructure of the society. 60 cents out of every tax dollar is used to pay off the debt that that country owes to the International Monetary Fund, to the World Bank, to the United Nations, to U.S. banks. they're never going to escape poverty. So in addition to lovingly live simply and using our surpluses to respond to the needs of the poor, we must in fact begin to say, how do we cancel third world debts? How do we change trade agreements so that everybody has a fair chance to make a living in this world? Yeah. How do we create jobs for the poor?
And I'm encouraged by the things that we can agree in across, like this, the conservative liberal sort of divide that we've had.
Because the politicians are dividing us, because in reality, there's more agreement among us than the politicians are willing to admit.
Yeah, I was on a panel with this guy from the Department of Defense, and I got to ask him a question. He's asking me questions, so I got to I was ready for my sort of stump the teacher question, you know. And I said, well, given the fact that we know Saddam Hussein had some weapons because we have the receipts from them, you know, the whole Iran-Contra scandal, I said, right now, over 80% of the world is getting weapons or has had weapons contracts with the United States. We're arming most of the world. I said, it's like if I was giving out, you know, guns, selling guns to kids in my neighborhood and going, don't shoot each other, you know? And I said, do you think we have an obligation to begin disarming the world through stopping companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing from dealing weapons around the world? And he was still for a minute, and he said, yeah, I don't think that we're creating a safer world. Jesus says if you pick up the sword to die by the sword, you know, and we've seen it happen again and again. So I think that there are beautiful signs of that. And what I look for is, there's a great scripture in Luke where John the Baptist is in prison. You know, he's been put there subverting the empire a little bit, and he sends his disciples to come and see if Jesus is the one that they've been waiting for, right? And I love Jesus' answer. They're like, John sent us, are you the one that we're waiting for? And Jesus doesn't say, yes. He says, tell John what you see. Tell John that the blind see, the lepers are touched, the poor, the good news is being preached to the poor. Tell John. And I think he knew that John knows the signs. And I wonder, what integrity do our lives have? If they said, are you a Christian? Anybody can say they're a Christian. You know, what if we said, tell me what you see? Are you a Christian? Gandhi said, ask the poor. They'll tell you who the Christians are. Ask my enemies if I'm a Christian.
One little vignette. I had a student at University of Penn when I taught there, who I led to Christ. And he was a Jewish guy. And one day we were walking across campus, the two of us, and somebody from InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, a wonderful group on campus, had invited me to speak. And a kid said, hey, are you going to be... you'll be at the meeting tonight, right, Dr. Campolo? I said, yeah, I'll be there. What time is it? He said, 7 o'clock. And my Jewish friend said, can I come? And I said, sure. And this young man said to this Jewish friend of mine who had just given his life over to Jesus, are you a Christian? And without blinking, the kid said, well, only you can answer that. Usually, you say, you can never tell whether a person's a Christian or not. And this kid just... it is naive, and he said, only you can determine whether I'm a Christian. What a great line.
And it's exactly what Jesus lives. You know, Jesus, they're like, you're the Son of God. He's like, shh, don't go around telling everybody. Yeah. Like, let them figure it out. Yeah. You know, let them figure it out. And is America a Christian nation? Well, tell us what you see. Yeah. How much do we look like Jesus? Yeah. And that's what I love about this.
Somebody thinks that we're going to be a Christian nation if we have the Ten Commandments hanging in every courtroom, that we're going to be a Christian nation, if we have the Pledge of Allegiance saying under God that we are a Christian nation, somehow if we have Bible reading and prayer in the public school. And here we are, 6% of the world's population, consuming 43% of the world's resources. We have thumbed our nose selfishly at the rest of the world's needs, and we say, and we're a Christian nation. I think the Lord is saying, if you're a Christian nation, don't tell anybody. It's an embarrassment.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
because what's at stake right now is not just the identity of America, but the identity of what it means to be Christian.
Yeah.
What
the rest of the world interprets us as a Christian nation, because we keep telling them that we are. And boy, they're saying, if that's what Christianity is about, no wonder.
Yeah. So when the pastor of Riverside has said that Jesus needs some good lawyers because he's been really misrepresented. And that's part of the thing that I love about Eastern, I'm really proud of, is that in many ways it embodies things that I think look like Christ. The fact that we are moving towards renewable energy and wind energy, the fact that we gave the workers a living wage, you know, and those things that I think begin to embody the things that we value. Because students aren't always asking that. They're not asking questions around justice. They're asking selfish questions like, how's the spiritual life? How's the academic life? How's this going to prepare me for a job? And I think we need to really have young people that are asking questions about the institutions that they're going to sink a lot of money into, going, how do these things embody the very things that Jesus talked about? Well, how do they pay their workers? Where do they get their energy from? How are they going to create me into the person that I want to be? And what I see in a lot of young folks is that imagination to rethink their vocations. You know, so the question isn't just whether or not they're going to be a doctor or lawyer, but what kind of doctor they're going to be, what kind of lawyer they're going to be. And this one guy came up to me the other day and he said, I've been working with robotics and electrical engineering, and he's like, I was just going to make all kinds of great robots and stuff. He said, but now I saw the kids in Afghanistan and how they're getting their hands blown off in landmines as they try to dismantle them. And he said, I'm going to go and I'm going to make machines that can dismantle landmines.
Yeah.
And I saw another young man who's married, and he was deeply concerned about, as a Christian, deeply concerned about the conflict in Israel and Palestine. And he said, I'm not just going to, he said, it's very complicated to know what to do. So he said, I just moved there with my family.
Yeah.
And he's a businessman. And so now they have a fair trade clothing company where they employ 90 Palestinians, missionally just going, hey, we're here to be with you and to live with you. And it's those things that I think are beginning to spread all over the place that give such integrity to the gospel that we live, because we're a different kind of doctors, we're a different kind of lawyers than,
exactly,
than the folks around us.
I had a young woman here at Eastern come up to me and said, Dr. Kent Pullen, a wonderful thing happened. I just got a job in the Abington School District, which is a very affluent, very wonderful school district north of the city of Philadelphia. And she said there were almost 200 applicants for the job, and they gave it to me. Mm. And I said, oh, that's such a waste. Mm. And she said, what are you doing? I said, well, you're telling me that if you hadn't taken that job, that there were like 199 other people that could have done it and could have taken that position and could have fulfilled that role as a teacher. She said, well, yes. I said, the school system in Philadelphia was 600 teachers short this year. Isn't it the obligation? I mean, when we talk about a Christian lifestyle, isn't it the Christian obligation to maximize one's life for the sake of others? Are you maximizing the contribution you can make to society to take a position that somebody else will take? Or will you, in the words of that great apostle, Captain Kirk, boldly go, boldly go where no one has ever gone before?
Yeah. We just had this young guy he's overseeing millions of dollars. He's got a foundation and everything, and he came to the house, and he's, what's beautiful is he's thinking so differently about the world because he's at the top, you know, and he sees, hey, the world's not going to be safe as long as a handful of people, you know, live however they wish while masses of the world live in great poverty. And right now the average CEO is making $1,500 an hour, and the average worker is making about $7.50 an hour. And going, that's not God's plan. So he's like, I'm a businessman, but I'm a really bad businessman. You know, he's like, we try to make sure that everybody in our company is cared for. And he came to the house. He's going to help fund our little Greasel co-op, I think. But we fed him this fancy dinner, all made out of food from the trash, you know. And we had dinner together and just dreamed a little bit about the world. And we there are so many great stories that he's seen too, because one of the groups that we met up with was a group of folks that say, you know, it's crazy that we're selling water. We buy water in a country where, you know, you pay $3 for a bottle of water or something, and 1.2 billion people don't have water. So they started this company that they bottle basically tap water, right? And they sell it at music festivals and Christian concerts and all these
things. Nobody knows the difference anyway.
and all of the money that they make off of selling water goes towards building wells with indigenous labor, with folks like Living Water and things like that are doing that work, you know? So I think that imagination and creativity is something that we really need. But a lot of social justice folks are not marked by a lot of joy or celebration. Yeah. And that's where Emma Goldman, she said, if I can't dance, it's not my revolution.
Yeah.
And I think that we need a movement of people that are talking about these really serious things, but also we have a sense of joy and celebration. A few years ago, we were doing this Bible study where we were talking about justice and inequality and the Jubilee. We were studying the Jubilee in the Scripture, where this dismantling of debt and, you know, setting slaves free, redistributing property, and someone had money that was invested in stocks, and they said, well, you know, I'd like to give this away to back to the poor, back to the workers that it seems I've taken it from. And so we said, well, what should we do? You know, how should we do that? We said, let's have a Jubilee celebration, you know, and where better to do it than on Wall Street, where the money came from, you know? And so we decided that we would invite all the right people to the party. So we invited homeless folks from all over lower Manhattan to Wall Street. And each flyer with the invitation, it had a dollar on it. And it said, you know, come to Wall Street. We're going to celebrate another vision of economics, you know, than Wall Street. And we planned this with about 50 of us. And a lot of folks have been homeless that were helping plan the event. So we were really mindful of what we were doing and the power of it. So we got all of the money in small change. We got $1,000 in nickels, $1,000 in dimes and quarters, and it's a lot of nickels. You know, we're carrying all these, and we brought them up to Wall Street. And that morning, just as the stock exchange was opening, we gathered everyone on Wall Street, and the police were already there, and they said, this is not happening, it's a spoof, you know. And our 70-year-old nun, Sister Margaret, she had brought her shofar, you know, so she could kick it off right. So she stands up on the platform.
This is a nun.
Outside of Wall Street. And just as the bell was ringing on Wall Street, she blows the shofar. And then everybody had filled up backpacks and bags with money. And so we start dumping it on the streets outside of Wall Street. And we said, this money used to be Wall Street's, but now it belongs to the poor, it belongs to the workers. And we said, we believe that Jesus has a different vision of economics and what's happening here, and we celebrate the Jubilee today. And folks just were dancing, you know, the streets were silver. Folks, one guy came out of Wall Street, and he's talking on the phone with his wife, and he says, honey, you're not going to believe what's going on here. He says, there's money falling from the sky. You know, yeah. He's like, good day on Wall Street. And this other guy, he was a street sweeper, so he's sweeping his dustpan, and he's got it filled full of money. You know, he flashes it at us, and he says, thank you, it's a good day. You know? So it was that celebration that I think so magnetic, you know, that it's not just going, this is what's so wrong, but it's not just protesting, but protestifying.
Like it's showing holding something. Up an alternative.
Yeah.
It's not just condemning the system, but rather not condemning the system at all. It's holding up an alternative lifestyle and making it so attractive that you say, why would I want this when I could have that?
Yeah.
You know, and I just watch these people around me who are caught up in this consumeristic lifestyle that we've prescribed for them. And there was a song by Peggy Lee a few years ago called, Is This All There Is? Is this all there is? You get the house, you get the car, you got the marriage is empty, the kids are messed up, and nobody seems to be happy. I mean, you just say, this isn't any fun. I'm amazed at how little fun there is. I was speaking at I guess it was UCLA, it was either there or USC out in Los Angeles, and I was speaking to a group of sociology students. And at one point, I said, you know, I'm 72 years old. You're 22, 23. I'm younger than you are. Because people are as young as their dreams and their visions and as old as their cynicism. And there you are, a bunch of cynical materialists who don't have any values beyond getting the money, getting the job, getting the house, you have no dreams. No visions. And the Bible says, without dreams and visions, people perish. And if your only dream is a house and a car, the American dream is not a good dream. It's, if you got this stuff, you somehow will be a fulfilled person. And what we're saying is, oh no. And I have all of these kids who are trying to find themselves. They come, trying to find myself. And the Bible says, and whosoever seeks to find himself will lose himself.
Yeah.
But whosoever willing to lose himself for my sake and the sake of the kingdom will find himself.
Yeah. God's got a dream that's even beautiful.
Yeah.
More beautiful than America's.
Yeah. The God's got a better plan
for anything less than that.
And that's a good question that the church isn't asking. Namely,
Do you really believe that God's plan for your life is better than the plan that America has for your life? Mm-hmm. That's a fair question. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're asking it, and I think we're asking it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really important.
How are you doing?
I have a story, maybe a specific story you'd like to say about weddings.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead. Do you want to go?
Yeah, sure. Well, two of my housemates, Mike and Michelle, actually got married in the old abandoned cathedral where we started, where there were a bunch of homeless families that had been living in there. And I will never forget their wedding, because their wedding was just the embodiment of the celebration of the kingdom. Because we had families that had been homeless that used to live in the cathedral that came and shared their story. And we had, it was potluck. So everybody just brought everything that, you know, that they cooked together. And our community was behind their wedding. And we took vows to love and cherish them and their covenant. And all of it was such an embodiment of a celebration that reflected what God wants. And when we think about, like, I think all of the patterns that we find ourselves in, I'm not married, you know, yeah. So I'll figure out how I get married, I guess. But there's a group of folks over in the UK that they said, you know, we don't think about how our wedding celebrations reflect the values that we have, where the ring comes from that we wear on our finger. And these guys were jewelers. So they ended up finding themselves in a really bad industry that was giving wedding bands to, you know, that were made, you know, from blood diamonds and things like that. So they ended up going to these areas, and they do a completely different kind of jewelry business now. And they go and they meet the workers in the countries where they mine the precious gems and metals. And then they said, and from the minute that when you put a wedding band on your partner, you know, from the minute it was mined till it goes on your finger, it was made with dignity. And that everyone shares the profits of that together, and we know each other's family. And I thought about that, even for folks, you know, Catholics that are taking their vows and get a wedding band, like, where does that come from? And how do we celebrate something that has integrity, that embodies what...
Yeah, that movie, Blood Diamonds, is that...
Yeah.
Why does Hollywood have to make clear to the American people that things like engagement rings are connected with the oppression and destruction of people in third world countries?
Yeah.
Why isn't the church speaking on these issues?
Yeah.
Why aren't we making these things clear?
Well, and the great thing about these guys is they did it, and then the wife of one of these jewelers, the businessman, she's a theologian, so she wrote up the theology of why they're a peculiar kind of jewelry, you know, business, why they do business differently. So I think that we have to add, that part of what we really suffer from is a starving imagination. You know, we just don't have the ability to think outside of, hey, why do we cater dinner? It's more fun to have a potluck, you know?
You know, it's a very interesting thing, and usually the couple doesn't have two dimes to rub together after the wedding's over. The amount of money that we are spending on these shows, these displays, I was in a bar mitzvah for some Jewish kids in which I would say the thing must have cost at least $50,000 for the whole hall, the presents, the decorations, the food. There is an obscenity in all of that. Mm-hmm. And once again, it diminishes the capacity of the group to do anything imaginative. A friend of mine was awarded the award Teacher of the Year some years ago from Guy Dow up in Minnesota. He was a high school teacher. And some kids came and said, we're getting ready for the senior prom. So he said, why don't we have a real senior prom? Mm. Instead of all the fancy dresses and all the flowers and all the expense of the senior proms now costing kids about $1,000 a piece, let's have it. He said, what do you mean, senior prom? Let's invite all the seniors. Mm. So they got to school gym, and the kids decorated it, you know, and aired out the place because the basketball team had just stopped practicing at 5 o'clock, you know. And they sent out invitations to all the old folks' homes. Mm. And about The thing was to start at 7 o'clock. He said about 5:30, little ladies were showing up saying, there's supposed to be a dance here tonight. We're supposed to be a dance. We're supposed to be at a dance. And he said by about 6, he realized they had a problem because the old ladies were showing up, but not many old men. He went out and got the football team. He said, get showered and get in there and dance with these old ladies. And it kept on picking up and picking up and picking up. He said, 11 o'clock at night, I just had to yell, go home, because nobody wanted to leave. And the next day, he said, the kids came up to him and said, you know, we've had school dances before, but that was more fun than we've ever had at anything we've ever done at this school. Once again, no cost, no attempt to show off the sex stuff. You know, you think of the senior prom where you got to have a date so that the kid that can't get a date feels left out and forsaken and rejected. Here, everybody was included. Everybody was having a great time. And so much more fun. Mm-hmm. And instead of it being this wasted money, it was money spent for food and refreshments and decorations, but in a reasonable manner and in a way that enabled everybody to enter into the joyfulness of God.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all the gifts you get too. You know, like Mike and Michelle, they had everybody give gifts to folks in our neighborhood, you know, to celebrate their wedding. Like, what better way to celebrate than to make sure that kids have school supplies and, you know, things that they need. And it's interesting how some of the most important moments in our life are marked by, like, mass consumption, you know, and it's how we feed that. And Christmas is another one for, you know, where I think that I've heard like 70% of our retail consumption goes on between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So part of what we've tried to do is think about how does that reflect Jesus? Like this homeless baby refugee born in a manger, you know? And one of my friends
the gifts
said,
are getting so expensive. I mean, they're spending like $300, $400 on a child at Christmas. That's normal.
Yeah. One of my friends that's a pastor, he said that we did something a little different. We had the kids come together and we studied about Jesus and how the first Christmas looked.
You've been listening to one of the 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut, a conversation between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne. To learn how this powerful dialogue came to be, listen to episode number 3, The Saga of Simply Enough. The link is in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Our hope is that you will be so motivated by this series that you will want to share the message with others in your congregation or group. Order a copy of the DVD Choose Justice with his extensive discussion guide from the store at thesimpleway.org for only $10. It is also available from World Vision Canada and from Tony Campolo's online store. All those addresses are given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. See pictures of Alternative's crew in Philadelphia producing the original and links to the bonus video segments. Links are in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. To get better acquainted with Tony and Shane and their ministries, follow the links in the show notes. Each episode of Tony and Shane Uncut, including the podcast and the show notes, will be released to iTunes, Stitcher, and the other podcast directories about the 1st and the 15th of the month, May through August. However, if you want to hear more of the 3.5-hour dialogue, you can. Go to simplelivingworks.org, window number 3, click the episode index, scroll down to the backup section, click on the episode of your choice. Sorry, you can only download episodes into your iPod or smartphone, as each episode with its show notes is released to iTunes and Stitcher. Those instructions will be given in the show notes of each episode, so if you want to listen to one and then hear more, you can. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org. Leave a message on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. All those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click on window number 3. In addition to this podcast and its show notes, we produce new Simple Living Works blog several times a week. We hope you'll read it and subscribe. This blog is the companion to our 2 times a month podcast. The content is different, though the subject is the same. Click on Blog at the top of the show notes for each episode. As one of our early and long-standing supporters of alternatives, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, known as the ELCA, has pledged to keep a copy of each resource produced by alternatives and to make copies available by request at a nominal cost. Feel free to contact them at the offices near Chicago. The complete contact information is given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. In the next episode, I present the next of 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Subscriptions are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Pinterest. Urge your friends to do the same. Provide your email address to receive our monthly Simple Living Works e-newsletter. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We do, of course, recommend and urge alternative giving. Thanks to John Pitney and the band Earth Mama for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Thanks also to World Vision Canada, who now owns the audio of Tony and Shane. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.